This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On Monday, a judge in Puerto Rico ruled that the government there has 7 days to release death certificates and data related to the death toll of Hurricane Maria. The ruling was in response to a lawsuit filed by CNN and the Puerto Rican-based Center for Investigative Journalism, or CPI. Both organizations have been investigating the death toll following the storm and question the government's official tally of 64.
To investigate the government's count, we talked to more than 100 funeral homes across Puerto Rico. The funeral homes we surveyed claimed they'd seen more than 499 probable hurricane deaths. That's 9 times the official number.
Separately, a Harvard study published last week, which was based on interviews with more than 3,000 households, suggested that the true death toll may be more than 4,600, higher than the death toll in Katrina or from September 11th. Researchers estimate that as many as a third of the fatalities were due to a lack of access to medical care. But while the embattled Puerto Rican government fends off accusations of obstruction and worse, somewhere around 11,000 homes and businesses are still without power, and hurricane season has officially started back up. Last November, On the Media producer Alana Casanova-Burgess traveled to Puerto Rico to see for herself how the island was faring. This is one of her reported pieces from a show we called After the Storm.
Llegó y se fue. Llegó María y dejó la isla vida al revés. Y dicen, llegó María. Llegó y se fue.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. And you're listening to a verse written by the group Bamba Pal Pueblo about how Hurricane Maria blew in and out and turned the island backwards, inside out. The Category 4 hurricane hit with such force the trees were stripped of their leaves. The salt water burned the green off the grass as if blasted by a bomb.
On the plane, one of the first things we noticed when we were landing was just the acres and acres of trees. They were just brown. There wasn't
I tell you, it's just gone. It's all gone. All the trees is just, a lot of the trees are down, but the trees that stay up don't have any leaves at all.
We've been driving around Puerto Rico, and it's incredible to see that a paradise island was reduced to this. Everything you see is dead trees, downed power lines, and endless queues to get gas.
A paradise island? Not quite. What our producer, Alana Casanova-Burgess, saw in Puerto Rico was an island that found itself exposed, its secrets suddenly visible, not just to itself, but to the rest of us, too.
I met Benjamin Torres Cotay in a park in San Juan recently. He's a columnist and editor for Puerto Rico's largest newspaper, El Nuevo Día.
I had not been here since the hurricane. I find it very different. It had a lot of trees, a lot of palms.
The green has mostly come back to Puerto Rico, but the trees that lost branches look surreal, like green Q-tips with tufts of leaves coming out of the top. It's still unsettling.
As you can see now, it's almost naked.
A few weeks earlier, Gotay had written that Maria had ripped the skin off the island, revealing its skeleton and its flesh. We are left, he wrote, looking at ourselves in a warped mirror, confronted with the hardest realities of our collective life.
We've been living a long time under the assumption that we are rich or developed country. But the truth is that we have an enormous portion of our population living on poverty or near poverty. A lot of people living in rundown houses and houses not prepared to resist the force of a hurricane.
Before the storm, Puerto Rico's poverty rate was at nearly 45%. For context, Mississippi, the state with the highest poverty rate, is at 21%.
I use the image that it peeled the skin of Puerto Rico because I see it almost as a literal thing. You see a lot of communities that were covered by trees and vegetation. After the hurricane, they were rebuilt as what they really are.
One of the landscape's dominant features, aside from swaying palms and sparkling beaches, are shopping malls and big box stores. The island has the highest density of Walmarts and Walgreens in the world. Most towns have a public square, or plaza. But in San Juan, when people say they're going to plaza, they mean Plaza Las Americas, the mega mall that serves as the city's main meeting place. And generally, that assumed that most people had the money to spend. Inequality wasn't front of mind. But that's changed. This week, a UN envoy on extreme poverty and human rights toured Puerto Rico on a fact-finding trip. A study from the University of Puerto Rico found that the storm likely pushed the poverty rate up to 52%. In the town of Utuado, in the mountains, high school students were decorating the square ahead of a Christmas celebration. Walter Ronald Gonzalez Gonzalez was there too. He's the director of art, culture, and tourism for the region, one of the most rural, hardest hit areas of Puerto Rico.
We have seen poverty that was covered up, because now there are some people who have said, I haven't had electricity in my home for this many years, or I don't have tap water, and I have to use water from the river.
This story has long been overlooked by the local news shows because they prefer to focus on the coverage of sensational crimes rather than the steady state of deep poverty. But with so many trees gone, some facts are just too visible to be ignored.
For example, in the metropolitan area, there is a young guy who lives under a bridge. He has lived there for years, but now he can be seen. And over that bridge travel thousands of metro area residents. How is it possible that now, because a tree moved, they can see him for the first time?
Now, TV programs show critical aid getting to remote homes in the countryside, homes many didn't realize were always so isolated.
Unfortunately, they waited until Maria to do it, but it should have been done before. And that's the reality that Puerto Ricans didn't want to accept or even see.
Puerto Ricans have also been confronted with their place in the Caribbean.
Puerto Ricans don't often imagine themselves as one of the little islands, even though we are, right?
Yarimar Bonilla is an anthropologist at Rutgers University, now working on a book about the crisis. She says that as bad as things got in Puerto Rico during its 10-year recession, the relationship with the U.S. always set the island apart from the rest of the Caribbean.
We always have thought of ourselves as better off than our Dominican neighbors and our Cuban neighbors. And so right now, Cuba, they were able to recover from Irma quickly. They got their power back and they're doing good. The Dominican Republic, they're sending us aid and everything we're eating is from over there.
Besides, the U.S. sent more American troops and helicopters to Haiti in the days after the 2010 earthquake than we sent to Puerto Rico.
So it's really forcing Puerto Ricans to come to terms with that reality. I don't know where that will lead politically.
All discussions inevitably lead to the issue of the island's political status. And here we are. But first, an observation. In my first week in Puerto Rico, 50 days after the storm hit, I began to notice a pattern. Even after telling me that washing laundry by hand made their skin raw, or that reading by candlelight was straining their eyes, people would also tell me they had gotten used to a new normal. They had grown accustomed. Acostumbrados.
Es cuestión de acostumbrarse.
Ya estoy acostumbrado.
Hemos tenido que acostumbrarnos y seguir
luchando. No two disasters are alike. But would Floridians or Texans just get used to not having electricity for 2 months, now going on three? Puerto Ricans have settled into a kind of extended coping limbo. Community groups were activated to help, but restoring the full electric grid could take months. Again, Yarimar Bonilla of Rutgers.
So like when I ask people, like, why don't you protest? Or how does this make you feel about the government? Like one guy said, ¿qué voy a hacer? No me voy a pegar un tiro. What am I going to do? I'm not going to shoot myself in the head. It's a phrase that people use here. I think it speaks to the lack of options that people imagine. So it's either I accept it or I leave or I take my own life.
So a lack of perceived options. And yet, one of the words you hear a lot in Puerto Rico is resilience.
Resilience is a human capacity to deal with tenacity when confronted with traumatic and difficult situations.
Alfredo Carrasquillo is a psychoanalyst and an expert on leadership at the University of the Sacred Heart in San Juan.
But resilience is not resignation. Resilience implies being stronger to handle things, and when things are not fair and not just, you confront them. So I'm not that sure if what we are seeing in many people in Puerto Rico is resilience or resignation. Resilience has political potential. Resignation has no political potential.
I first met Carrasquillo in June while reporting a piece for On the Media about the use of the word colony to describe Puerto Rico's relationship to the mainland. For decades, Puerto Ricans used euphemisms like Commonwealth or Associated Free State. But many had begun to use a label they felt was more honest, albeit painful. Carrasquillo uses colony, and he says it's essential to understanding why Puerto Ricans don't protest more.
It doesn't surprise me. What surprises me is our inability as a people to respond with anger to indignity. That resignation is impressive.
I will say that people are afraid, more than resign, are afraid.
Sandra Rodriguez-Coto, host of that nightly call-in show on WAPA Radio, hears constantly from callers about how hard it is just to get by and how they fear losing what little they have.
If you ask people, people don't want to be separated from the United States. We feel American, even though we might think we're Puerto Rican culturally. That's a dichotomy, that's a contradiction that we have. And I think it's because of so many years of being a colony.
There's a history of protesters being persecuted on the island, especially those in the independence movement. Entire families were blacklisted by the government. In the 50s, a gag law banned public speech about independence and even outlawed displaying the Puerto Rican flag. Now, says Coto, Maria has exposed the island's real status as a U.S. colony. No more euphemisms. Americans, some of them anyway, are finally paying attention.
I think the American public, for the first time ever, is seeing Puerto Rico for what it is. I mean, we're being on the forefront of the news. So now people are saying, wow, we have some people dying, and we're doing in Puerto Rico what we have been criticizing in other places. They might feel a little bit embarrassed for what they're seeing in Puerto Rico.
The columnist Benjamin Torres Cotay thinks that if this were anywhere else, there would be major protests in the streets, people demanding more government help and a faster recovery. But after more than 100 years of U.S. colonial rule, Puerto Ricans are used to waiting and fending for themselves.
People here protest by immigrating. So that is a fact of life in Puerto Rico. That is a characteristic of the people of Puerto Rico, basically. Resignation, yeah. People here are not used to stand up to power.
I asked him, how do you solve that?
Well, I don't have an answer. Colonialism is a two-way problem, and the colonial power is the United States. They have to speak clearly, and they have not done that in over 100 years.
In a colonial situation, there's also the matter of who is really in charge, who you can appeal to. Investigative reporter Omaya Sosa Pascual.
Who are they going to protest? The governor? The governor here doesn't have a lot of power. You're going to hop on a plane and go protest in Washington? Nobody here has the money to do that.
There actually have been a handful of marches this week. Small ones, but there are more every day. One town even hired retired electrical workers to do repairs because they were tired of waiting. On the afternoon I met Gotay, I showed him a news clip of a march in Aguada, a town in the Northeast. He said there must have been a really effective community leader there. But it was a good sign.
We are not going to have the same country. Puerto Rico was not a great country before Maria. And I don't know how it's going to be, but it's going to be different. That's for sure.
He says the storm also revealed how weak Puerto Rico's institutions really are. For 72 hours after the hurricane, it was as though it didn't have a government at all. And the chaos that has followed shows the pitfalls of appointing officials on the basis of connections rather than experience. On Wednesday of this week, Sandra Rodriguez-Coto invited a couple of newly minted activists on her show. They had organized San Juan neighborhoods for a march. Here's one. We feel impotent, she said, because we don't know anything. The government doesn't have a plan, and they're winging it. And it feels like they're telling us a lie all the time. Over 200,000 have already left for Florida since Maria. But Laura, in the mountains of Utuado, finds that very strange.
Lo amo más.
I love it more, she said. Leaving here? No, on the contrary. We have to deal with this and keep going.
Al contrario, tenemos que bregar. It was as though it opened our eyes. We looked around and we saw our neighbors. These were people who never said hello. That's what Maria revealed to us.
That's my aunt, Ana Casanova, who lives in the mountains in Ciales. Her roosters, for some reason, crow even at night. And now that the vegetation has grown back around her house, we could barely see her neighbors' lights powered by generators.
Yo veo uno, dos, tres luces.
I said the other day, la naturaleza es más rápida que el hombre. You know, nature is faster than man.
Yarimar Bonilla of Rutgers.
And so nature is already recuperating from the storm, and the leaves are coming back. And so I worry that what was uncovered for a minute, like, is already fading again from view.
One of her students in Puerto Rico told her that without cell signal, he had time for long conversations dissecting what was really happening, observations about politics and the future. But then the cell service returned, and he and his girlfriend turned back to their iPads and their cell phones.
I want to think that the kinds of conversations that they had during the storm are going to have a long-term impact on the kind of things that were revealed.
Older generations have survived hurricanes. None as bad as Maria, but still. Now a whole new generation, those who were already struggling with a decade-long fiscal crisis, have looked in the mirror.
I look at the young people, like my students, and I tell them they're strong, like my grandmother is strong. I want to retain hope that this is going to impact those young people and that they are going to live differently and create something different for us here. People know what's on the other side of the trees now, even if they can't see them through the leaves necessarily.
Our producing station, WNYC, has been providing continuing coverage of the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, most recently in a series produced in collaboration with Latino USA about Puerto Rico's crippling debt. To listen, go to wnyc.org/series/Puerto Rico, the future of debt.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.